Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, coming to you from my basement out here in the eastern plains of Colorado. During the demise of Western civilization, the breakdown of faith, family, and freedom, where 42% of kids are born outside of wedlock, up from 6% in 1970. But the good news is the Denver Broncos made it into the Super Bowl. So I know that transition didn't work very well, Dave.
Oh, with that what? Who?
Yeah, Denver Broncos.
It's a
team of horses.
Actually, I think it's a football team.
It's a football team, right. Football team. They made it into the Super Bowl. And this big, big, big deal. I mean, I was on this plane out of Phoenix on Saturday night trying to get back for worship on Sunday. And there were about another 247 passengers, Dave, and they were not coming to Denver for worship. Well, actually, they were coming to Denver for worship. You know, somebody asked me, so why are you going to Denver? I said, we're going to go to church. So the guy next to me said, you know, so why are you going to Denver? I said, well, we're going back home. We're going to go to church. We're going to go to church tomorrow. Says the Denver Broncos. It says no to a little Presbyterian church up in Castle Rock, Colorado.
Oh, so.
And it was chaos on that flight. I mean, there was orange everywhere. There was orange everywhere. And one of the stewardesses, I think she was mad for the Broncos. It was nuts. She had this big old horse head on her throughout the flight. And that was distracting as
and
it was.
Nothing says safety like a stewardess with a horse head.
That's right. And she had the when they did the little oxygen mask thing, she put it on the snout of the horse. And then she galloped down the aisle, and then she jumped up onto the seats, and she was trotting over passengers all the way down the aisle. On this Southwest flight. So
that was sound very professional.
It was not real professional. She was nuts for the Broncos.
Are you sure she was a stewardess? She just wasn't.
I thought this woman is sort of like one of the temple prostitutes in, you know, back in the pagan religion days, you know, when they had the pagan prostitutes there. You know, I mean, just a real devotee of the whole Denver Bronco thing. So, I mean, she was a devotee of the Broncos. I don't think I've ever seen somebody so excited and so, you know, completely out of control about this thing. Now, Dave, you know, you don't see that kind of worship these days in church.
No, you don't.
You don't see a whole lot of that in church. You don't see,
of course, you don't
a lot of fervency. Of course, I don't particularly want people galloping up and down the aisles with horse heads on their.
No. If you wanted that kind of activity in church, you'd probably have to have an open keg in the back, like they do at the football games,
at the
where
football
people
games,
are.
Yeah, they have to loosen up.
Close
a little bit
to being
first,
inebriated,
yeah.
Being filled with the spirits.
I don't think she was inebriated, though. I think that would have been against Southwest policy.
She was just drunk on Bronco
sandwich. She was just nuts for the Broncos. And friends, the Denver Broncos, in case anybody hasn't heard yet, is in the Super Bowl.
So are the Seahawks.
Seattle Seahawks, yeah. Right. They made it too.
By the way, I think those are the two states, Washington and Colorado, that legalized marijuana. So, you know,
I hadn't put that together.
Yeah.
Dave, you're a genius.
I don't know about that, but let's just think both cities are pretty high for their team right now.
They are.
Spirits are high.
The spirits are high in Washington and Colorado for the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks. We'll see how all of it works out. But Dave, this sports phenomena is just wild in the present day. And I'm a student of history, and you don't find this much throughout history. You do find it, you know, perhaps in the Roman games with the Colosseum, but this is a modern phenomenon.
Yeah,
this is the last
not like
50
in
years or 100 years.
The Confederates put together their all-star team and they played the Yankees all-star, the Union all-star team, and they got together.
None of that. No,
they kind of
they actually had a real war
back in those days when they had a ball that was coming out of a musket.
Yeah, well, friends. Apparently, here's another article I want to draw into this discussion today. And I'm not saying that sports is completely illegitimate or immoral, friends. I mean, there are principles that ought to govern our use of sports. In fact, I talked to a Christian young man who was just drafted to a minor league team down in Phoenix, Arizona over the weekend. And he was pretty excited about the possibilities, but I sat down with him for about 30 minutes and talked through some of the traps and you know, he was receptive, and I was happy to be able to talk to him through some of these things, because Dave, I think sports can be a problem And yet there were a lot of Christians involved. I mean, here's a story from Seattle where the pastor up there from Mars Hill Church,
Mark Driscoll.
Mark Driscoll, thank you, interviews a number of these Seattle Seahawks guys. And the Seahawks defensive passing game coordinator, Rocky Sato, says Jesus is better than the Super Bowl. And a number of the players were clearly in agreement with that. Jesus is better than the Super Bowl. And I think that's good. I think that's healthy when, you know, your leading stars today are willing to step out and say, you know, Jesus Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He's not just passing a ball around a gymnasium, but he is trouncing his enemies, destroying death, hell, and the devil forever, and bringing about his kingdom. And I think that's more impressive than even what Peyton Manning can do with the Denver Broncos on a playoff game.
A little bit more.
Yeah, you know, that's more impressive to me.
I think forming the worlds, that's a little bit more impressive.
Yeah,
than
building the entire universe with all the galaxies and planets. And yeah, that's even more impressive than Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm actually really happy that the Seahawks defensive passing game coordinator confessed that Jesus is better than the Super Bowl. I wouldn't think that every American would agree with that, though.
No, I don't think so. Americans worship their sports. They're certainly like them to distract them from the real things in life. Now, you did say that sports aren't sin per se, but, you know, I would encourage people not to watch the commercials and not to watch the halftime show, because there's generally not much that will edify the spirit in those things. Mm-hmm. If you're going to watch it, you probably ought to have a scorecard so you can take a thought captive and say, is this commercial encouraging intoxication, fornication, pride? Is it lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life? Or is it trying to sell me something in righteousness and goodness? Now, it's not to say every McDonald's ad is a bad ad. But, you know, at some point you got to say alcohol and women is probably not the best thing.
A little more lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life than the kingdom of God. I think you're right there. Dave, as you mentioned that this will be televised, and the last couple of years, 110 million viewers are picking up the Super Bowl. That's up from 86 million in 2005. So it's gone straight up. I mean, it's gone way up. Lots and lots of people watch the Super Bowl.
That's just the U.S.
That is an international phenomenon, too. Approximately one-third of the United States. That's probably the biggest church service in America, arguably. 110 million people. That's more people than would show up for a Billy Graham crusade.
Yes. Yes, that's
by a long shot.
That's even more people that would show up for a Barack Obama inauguration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what did he get?
I don't know, a few thousand. I don't know. They had to pack it in with union guys and teachers and other people who were out of work just to make it look full. But I'm just saying it's big.
Yeah, it's big. 110 million, that's a lot of people. 110 million people, that's probably the largest church service in America, my friends. And according to the Seahawks players interviewed by Mark Driscoll up in Seattle, Jesus is better than the Super Bowl. I mean, this is a really big deal, Dave. These commercials on the Super Bowl will be something like $4 million an ad. I mean, that's more than I charge for my Generations broadcast.
So I'm guessing Generations with Vision will not be having it.
We're not going to
probably not
going to
see
no.
The apostate get it now at KevinSwanson.com during the Super Bowl.
No, not this year.
But our listeners can get apostate by going to KevinSwanson.com still, can't they?
Sure.
And
thanks for the plug.
Yeah. We're not going to charge $4 million
for
this
ad. Plug. Yeah, thanks for the plug. Okay, my friends, this is a big deal. It's probably bigger than Jesus in the eyes of the average citizen. Certainly a crowd attracts a crowd, Dave. I think that's part of it. But these are the biggest and baddest athletes in the world, and it seems to attract people. People appreciate athletic ability probably more than they appreciate spiritual maturity. You follow me here? And I'm drawing in the Apostle Paul, where in 1 Timothy chapter 4, he says, bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is always a great gain. So you know, contrast there, gymnazo, or the gymnasium bodily exercise sort of thing that you would do in the gymnasium or on the gridiron. And he contrasts that with the Christian life and how the Christian life is one of struggle and battle against the world, the flesh, and the devil. And there are those who do amazing, courageous things as the servants of Jesus Christ. And Paul is way more impressed with that than he is with guys who have the ability to toss a ball around a gridiron.
Right. It seems like in the New Testament we use athletics, especially the gladiatorial games, as a metaphor for the Christian life.
Yeah.
We strive like a gladiator. We strive like a football player. And if you think about how a football player makes it to the NFL, makes it to the Super Bowl, it is a lifetime commitment.
Yeah.
It takes discipline. I know some of these guys are not spiritually disciplined. I know some of their behavior and legal activities are not disciplined. But to be that good, they have spent a lifetime striving and practicing to be the very best in the world. And I'm not the 350-pound lineman. You know, he's not just a big guy. He's had to study blocking schemes, and he's had to work at his craft and survive injury in order to get there. The wide receivers and the cornerbacks, these are some very agile, quick, fast athletes that have to endure extremely violent collisions. Mm-hmm. So we are impressed with their athleticism. And Paul says, look at their athleticism. Look at their commitment. Look how they strive. Strive like that against sin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I was thinking of Hebrews 11:12 myself as you were talking. In Hebrews 11, Paul talks about all the great football stars in history, all the baseball stars and their home run records. And, you know, I'm sorry. That's not Hebrews 11. Excuse me. Hebrews 11, Paul is talking about the great men of faith who've done amazing things, as in through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead to life again, others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And then it says, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, for consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. That's way, way more impressive. The guy who strives against temptation that comes to him from the world, the flesh, and the devil. The man who is able to withstand in the day of great temptation and attacks on the part of the evil one is the one who's most impressive. The guy who brought down kingdoms, wrought righteousness, stood for the pro-life cause against all kinds of opposition, was willing to put his life on the line for Jesus in communist countries, and his body was beaten for years and years in Romanian prisons. By communists who knew everything about torture. Men who are able to stand by faith over decades of torture. Way, way more impressive than Peyton Manning. And friends, I think it's a test of your faith. Who do you think is more impressive, James Bond or Polycarp? Peyton Manning or Justin Martyr? I mean, who is more impressive to you? And that's a real test for whether you have true faith or not. It's a real test for whether you have any substance to your faith or whether you're just somebody who's pretty external and carnal and physical. And perhaps you get lost in the metaphor, as Dave mentioned. This is the Super Bowl, football. The competitive sports are metaphors for battle, but not just metaphors for physical battle where armies go to war against each other, but It's a metaphor for the spiritual battle that wages on a metaphysical plane, a spiritual plane that's above the plane in which we live, but is associated with the plane we live. It's all part of our life. It's just that some people have no vision for it, Dave, and that's pretty sad when you have a man who sits there and watches the Super Bowl or watches his sports programs, but his daughter is all tied up in moral problems and his family's a wreck and his own spiritual life is barely extant, if it's existed at all. You know, he's engaged in metaphoric battle. He gets all carried away in the metaphor, but he's not really connected with the true battle. You think of the young man who's playing the video game in his parents' basement, just messing around. You know, he's trying to battle with these pretend foes, and he's trying to reach higher and higher levels on his computer game. But his sister's getting raped right outside the window there by some horrible mob. And he could care less about his sister. He just has to make it to the 27th level of this game. There's a guy who's pretty much abandoned reality, okay? He's lost a contact with the true battles of life. He has no idea how to defend the innocent, those who are being torn apart in abortuaries across this country. He's not really fighting the real battles. He's disconnected from the real battle. Because he's disconnected from reality. And that's sadly the case with so many people who are tied into the games.
And what we're not saying is that sports are bad or evil necessarily. What we're saying is that God should be more impressive to you, and your responsibilities before God ought to be more impressive to you. For many young men, being able to perform well at sports may be their ticket out of a certain situation into a better situation, perhaps a scholarship or getting on at a farm club and learning something about life. That's fine and dandy. I think what we're talking about, Kevin, is those who make sports their idol. Their week is determined. In Denver, a lot of people, their week is determined by what happened on the Sunday before, not in worship, not in the church worship, but in the stadium worship. Did the Broncos win? If so, they can have a good week. You know, their gods are on top. If the Broncos lost, then they have a bad week. Monday is a miserable day. More traffic jams. People are grouchy because their gods did not perform well for them. That's the problem. That's a detachment from what's life and what's meaning.
You know, Dave, you're right. If their idol is the game, and they're willing to put the game above the worship service, the worship of the true and living God on a Sabbath day or on a Sunday, they're in trouble. I think they're in trouble. I think they have another God before them, and they don't serve and worship the true and living God. It bothers me. It's bothered me for many years that these professional sports games are played out on Sundays. It just seems to me that, you know, the issue of Sunday doesn't come up much anymore. Even in this interview with these Seattle Seahawks fellows on the part of Mark Driscoll, no mention to the Sabbath day, no mention concerning Sunday. And at one time, the Sabbath day, Sunday, was dedicated to the worship of God, and it wasn't dedicated to professional sports, but that shift came about, I think, in the 1950s, didn't it? 1950s, 1960s.
Well, it certainly came about with the advent of television, because we were worshiping another God, and that God was revenue. And on Sundays, it turns out a lot of people aren't at work, and so advertising revenues can increase, especially in the television markets. More people could go to a game on a Sunday than went to a baseball game on Thursday. So I think what was driving this was the God of materialism.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dave, I'm not imposing my jurisdictional standards on every other family out there, but I do highly recommend that people understand something of the fourth commandment, that they study the fourth commandment, and they employ the fourth commandment. They apply it in their own lives. And the way we apply it is we turn off the media at 6 p.m. on Saturday night, And it's off for 24 hours. We're preparing for worship on a Saturday night, and we get into the church worship Sunday at roughly 10:30 a.m. and it typically runs till about 1:30 p.m. And then we spend the rest of the day in fellowship with God's people. And so, Dave, I recommend some respite from media, and to really focus in on the things that really provide for rest, and that is to fellowship with God's people and to engage in the private and public exercises of God's worship.
And, you know, that's what really counts, because the Lord Jesus Christ, he's way more impressive than Peyton Manning or the Seattle defense. The stars of the faith, the ones that you read through in Hebrews chapter 11, these guys are even more impressive than the greatest athletes of our day. They did more things. We should be impressed with them. We should pass on our excitement when we read about Polycarp, especially as he stands there and he talks about that the Lord has never been unfaithful to him in 86 years, I think he says. And how could he be unfaithful to God? And then he turns and points to the crowd, and he accuses them of the very thing he was accused of. They're the atheists. And our spine should tingle as a great man of faith stands up in front of the crowd and wins one for our Lord. And we should be able to pass that on to our children. Oh, and by the way, then we can watch a football game and kind of yawn.
Well, my friends, I think some of the tests you need to ask concerning sports is, does it become more important? Does it become a more important priority than other priorities in your life? And if it's more important than the worship of the true and living God, if it's more interesting to you than the worship of the true and living God, then it's becoming an idol in your life. Has sports become an idol in your life? You need to ask yourself that question. You should ask that of your children, of your family as well. Here's another question. Does competition lead to pride? It doesn't always have to lead to pride, but does it lead to pride?
If you win, it probably does.
Oftentimes it does. I don't think it has to. Every time you win, it doesn't have to lead to pride, but oftentimes it does. And I think, Dave, these systems, these empires of men, the city of man, is always built on pride and man seeking honor for himself. And friends, just read Aristotle's Ethics if you want to understand how important honor is. Aristotle emphasizes the importance of pride. He believes pride is important. It's fundamental to the empire of man, but it's, of course, devastating in the city of God.
And Kevin,
that is where we live.
That was one of the most endearing things to me about a former quarterback in this town, Tim Tebow, is that after a win and they'd stick the microphones in his face, he would give glory to God, and then he would give glory to his teammates.
Yeah.
And he would say, it really wasn't me. Those guys did a great job there, and he did a great job over there, and he did a great job, and God made it happen.
It's interesting, though, Dave, those kind of guys don't last very long. If they give glory to God after the touchdown or after the game, that's sacrilege. Sacrilege. To a system that is really built up to provide for the pride of men and for the honor of man. And that, my friends, is the essence of the city of man. And it is the definition of the world, the pride of life, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh. That is what defines the world in the book of 1 John. So, again, the questions. Do these things lead to idolatry? Does competition lead to pride in your life? Are you lost in the metaphor? And does this distract you from what you really ought to be doing? Does it distract you from the real battles? Now again, sports can be a good metaphor that reminds you and prepares you for the real battle. So I'm not saying that a little bodily exercise can't profit a little. The Apostle Paul certainly says that. Well, folks, we'll be back in just a moment to talk a little bit more on this sports phenomenon. This is Kevin Swanson, the program is Generations. Every year, Generations with Vision sponsors a family economics conference somewhere in America. This year, we are sponsoring a conference in Denver, Colorado on March 27 to 29, 2014. This is for families who want to reintegrate the family into a family economic vision, for families who want to find ways to mentor their sons and daughters into the family economy. This is just the conference for you. How do you choose the optimum business streams for your family? How do you integrate your children into the family economy? What about budgets and debt and capital investments? And what about inheritance and taking care of grandpa and grandma along the way? We'll have young entrepreneur panels, mom and daughter panels, retail and e-commerce panels, audience surveys, and some great keynote speakers, including family economics guru Alan Carlson and entrepreneur Dave Tucker, and yours truly, Kevin Swanson. Join us for our Family Economics Conference in our backyard, Denver, Colorado, March 27 to 29, 2014. Register today at FamilyEconomics.com. That's FamilyEconomics.com. Register now. Early registration ends on December 31st. And we're back on the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson. The Denver Broncos are in the Super Bowl, and we live out in the Denver metro area, a safe distance from the demise of Western civilization. In a real sense, these things do mark the decline of Western civilization.
Bread and games?
Yeah, bread and games. Bread and games. That's the way the Roman Empire ended. It ended with the biggest games ever. They had the big games in the Colosseum. And, of course, it petered out through the 5th century. But through the 3rd and 4th century, the games were huge. But the people were interested in bread and games. Dave, I mean, that's where we are today. Hey, welfare is higher than it's ever been. I think you have the majority of America is on the government dole in some way, shape, or form. So we know that. The majority of America is on the dole today. America hardly has the character to carry on. America has young men who are more interested in playing games than sustaining the empire. That's a fact. Just read the articles flowing out of the Atlantic Magazine and Time Magazine, The End of Men, The Demise of Guys. The 70% of young men aren't grown up by 30 years of age, up from 30% in 1970, and on it goes. Twice as many 23-year-old men have, or women have, degrees as 23-year-old men, because women are more connected and more interested in building economies. Men are playing games while Rome burns. Yeah, it's bread and games. But there are some positives about sports. There are some positives. I mean, it teaches a measure of self-discipline. It's interesting. I mean, there are some Christians who actually respond to sports in a good way. They're fairly balanced in their way of handling it. And so you have a percentage of young men who learn some measure of self-discipline, teamwork, and leadership, and they actually get out into life and accomplish something. I mean, I know a couple of pro ball players who are godly Christian fathers who are raising 6, 7, 8, 10 kids and to the glory of God, and they've done a great job with it. And I think there is some character and some self-discipline that's learned on the ball field or on the gridiron by young men who need a little bit of coaching, and they get that coaching from some godly Christian coaches who set a good direction for their lives. So there is a good side to sports, and I think we have to remind folks of that. But as with everything in our culture, there's a double-edged sword here. There's a double-edged sword about film. There's something about film that can be very powerful, and it can do some good. But there's also something about film that can do a lot of evil, especially when people immerse themselves in the metaphor, and they lose themselves in the bread and games.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, the best thing about sports, from one who played a lot of high school sports and in junior high and so forth, isn't the game itself. The game itself is almost incidental. It's what happens in practice. It's the disciplining of the body. It's dealing with pain and keeping going. It's being motivated for a goal and not giving up. It's about having camaraderie. I mean, really having teammates in a team sport. It's about becoming humble, that is, not going for the fame yourself in order that the bigger achievement the team can win. This is going to be really important in business. It's going to be really important in the church that you realize it's not all about you. I had a coach, a wrestling coach, who really tried to instill honor in young men. I remember a guy saying something he shouldn't have said, and that coach, this is in junior high now, and this is a few years ago, you could still do this, he got into his face, and he told him that if he was going to be a self-respecting man, the kind of man who could grow up to be a winner, he would learn not to talk that way. And it was, I mean, here it is. I'm, what is this, 50 years later, almost, or 40 years later, and I can still remember that incident. It was a coach who cared enough about us to discipline us. And it's one of the few places left where a young boy can take on some manly virtues without society poo-pooing. It's a place where a man can be a man. You know, you're out there with other men. There's sweat. There's dirt. Yeah. There's blood. There's a little bit of violence sometimes. And it's okay.
Can't do that in the military much anymore.
No. They can't do it in the military anymore.
And eventually, I guess, professional football may be reduced to powder puff football, for all we know. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there are positives and negatives to many things. We've got to be careful not to step out and say these things are of the devil and these things are sin if the Bible does not define them as sin. Let's get a proper biblical balance concerning these things, including professional sports. Well, folks, you've been listening to another edition of the Generations Radio broadcast. You can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.